This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest today is Thomas Goodrich. He is the author of numerous books. Two that he is talking about today are called Scalp Dance, Indian Warfare on the High Plains, 1865 to 1879, was written or published in 2002. Also, The Darkest Dawn, Lincoln, Booth, and the Great American Tragedy, published in 2006. And you were talking about the funeral, and I just have to think that the assassination and the funeral just totally shifted all of the focus into another direction, and I just think that the whole thing was just escalated, and it functioned to do just that.
Philadelphia, you may be right on that. I'm not sure. I know that people were, many folks were throwing up their hands. It seemed like the end of time. America has never passed through a month like April, May of 1865. Not even close. 9/11 doesn't come close. If you put 9/11 and Pearl Harbor and every other thing you can think of, it still doesn't measure up to one third the impact that the Lincoln assassination had on the country. That's the impact it had on people. Back to Philadelphia, the folks, when they were trying to get through to Liberty Hall to see the body, they had to pass through the gate, which was actually a choke point, of course. And you've got this funnel effect of folks coming through. People did get squeezed through like you'd squeeze them through a meat grinder, I suppose, but they came through, a lot of them came through naked. That actually had their clothes stripped from them by this incredible pressure. And so seeing the body, of course, is a distinct second in their priority. After that, they're trying to get out and cover themselves. People died. They were crushed to death in this mess. And after, of course, Lincoln's body left Philadelphia for New York, people who had to clean up it, they said it looked like a battlefield when they tried to clean up the mess. There were things everywhere. There was blood. There was clothing. There were mourning items, things like that. It was just a debris field.
Things didn't change much. It caused a lot of death and violence when he was alive. I guess he did the same thing after he was dead.
Yeah, well, there you go. When they got to New York, things weren't much better. Of course, crowds were even greater there. And some fool had put the bier, the day that held his body, up one or two steps. I can't remember right now. But that meant that the crowd filing by had to also go down another step or two on the other side. And as people invariably, almost every person that walked by the coffin is, of course, looking at the face. And this is the first time they've ever seen Lincoln. And they're mesmerized by it. And they don't see that first or second step coming. And so they had to hire guards to catch the people as they came by because everybody's falling. That's what I mean by poorly planned and thought out. The crowds just increased as he kept going west. He got to Cleveland, and it's raining, and people would say, oh, the heavens are weeping for this great...
Oh, my word.
Yeah, when the sun would come up, they'd say the sun is smiling down on Lincoln. They had all these great things for it. But interestingly enough, after Indianapolis, someone had tried to blow the train up as the train left Indianapolis. They'd put a torpedo on there and wanted to derail the train. So there were still some people out there. But there's other things about the assassination that are fascinating, especially the train itself. A whole cottage industry sprang up around the funeral train. Souvenir sellers, people who sold purported hair from Lincoln, blood from Lincoln, books, all sorts of things, and people were willing to pay money for that. Also, pickpockets worked the crowds. There were plenty of pickpockets and hucksters.
Like a carnival.
It was like a carnival, indeed.
All righty. We're going to take a real quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back with our guest today, Thomas Goodrich, after a word from our sponsors.
Right now, food is everywhere. If you want it, you can buy it. For now. When the coming crisis occurs, how will you feed your family? Will healthy nutrition be available? The answer is probably no. Jeff Lawton will show you how to survive the coming crisis in an abundant way with permaculture. Jeff Lawton is a permaculture designer, teacher, and consultant who has shown people like you, people in 35 countries around the world, people who want to know what they can do to survive the crisis that they see approaching. There is an absolutely free video online that will help you discover how to survive by giving you step-by-step instructions in establishing food forests that will help you become survival confident. Log on to jefflawton.org right now. This free video will only be available for a limited time. That's jefflawton.org. G-E-O-F-F-L-A-W-T-O-N.org. Survival is not optional. Visit jefflawton.org today.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are: incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Micro plant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, micro plant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Our guest today is Thomas Goodrich. He is the author of numerous wonderful books, and the one that he's talking about right now is The Darkest Dawn, Lincoln Booth, and the Great American Tragedy, which was published in 2006. You were talking about the funeral and the carnival-like environment that it created. All these people were making money. And what about the some of the things that happened right after the assassination, when the State Department actually did not bother to block the road, the War Department failed to block the only plausible road that that Booth would have taken, and so they really didn't take the precautions to try to catch him.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't done much writing or research on the conspiratorial nature of it. There's so many points of concern about the conspiracy or lack thereof. I'm not sure myself. What was it, a Confederate attempt to kill Lincoln? Let's face it, Lincoln had tried to kill them too, Jeff Davis. I don't know. Did Booth act alone? Of course not. But let me say this. John Wilkes Booth was not some sort of a Manchurian candidate. John Wilkes Booth was a dyed-in-the-wool Southern patriot. He believed in the South. He worked for the South. He lived for the South. He thought, you know, John Wilkes Booth, a lot of folks like to paint him as some sort of drunken loser. Hey, I'm going to tell you what, he was the Tom Hanks of his day. This guy had everything going for him. He was at the top of the food chain in the acting world. His family was the first family of American acting, quite honestly, the Booth family. Mm-hmm. John Wilkes Booth had fame, he had fortune, he had females, he had his entire future ahead of him, and yet he threw it all away on this one final roll of the dice that perhaps by killing Lincoln he could postpone what looked like the inevitable at the time, that is the defeat of the Confederacy. He took that final last step, that final full measure of his life to save his beloved South. It didn't work that way. We know now in retrospect that John Wilkes Booth was, he fatally misjudged his time. But to call him a nut job or call him anything other than what he was, which is a super patriot, is a disservice to all patriots everywhere. Whether you agree with what he tried to do or not, doesn't diminish his stature, in my opinion. We could all learn from people like John Wilkes Booth, in my opinion. And I'm not saying that, well, maybe I've already said it. I don't need to say
what,
anything
learn
more
to be a better shot? Or I guess, no, I guess it was his shooting was pretty good then.
Yeah, one bullet, one dead. He was, but John Wilkes Booth, by all standards, was a likable fellow. He was charitable. He was generous. He was happy-go-lucky. He was fun. He tipped well. The women loved him, of course, and America loved him. His portrait was hanging in a lot of American living rooms at that time. And of course, it was taken down as soon as he killed Lincoln, but he was no hack actor, as they like to portray him. I don't know how Spielberg painted him, probably a drunken, worthless nobody, but that's far from the truth. Let me finish on the Lincoln funeral train here. You know, something else, yes, there were hucksters all around, everywhere, every stop they made, people hawking this and that, selling stuff like a carnival. And, of course, the pickpockets, they followed the train west because they worked the crowds. They'd go through the crowds, and people being really unsophisticated, of course, they had a heyday. In fact, in Indianapolis, I believe it was Indianapolis, cops got a tip on a train holding a whole bunch of pickpockets coming into the station, and they locked the car door as soon as they came to the station, locked the car door up and arrested them all. But folks would show up at the funeral itself, whatever town it may be, they'd show up with scissors, because they wanted to clip some of Lincoln's hair or a piece of his clothing.
Sure.
And had there not been guards, Lincoln would have been stripped. Every thread of clothing would have been stripped from him, and he'd be bald, of course. That's how hungry people were for souvenirs back there. And you know something else? This is some really awful aspects of the funeral. Lincoln left. It took 3 weeks from the time he was killed to the time he was buried. 3 weeks. That's how long this funeral train took. 3 weeks. We can't even make that work today. In other words, the body started badly decomposing on this trip back to Springfield, Illinois. So much so that the flowers were not so much to make things lively and pretty as to kill off the terrible odor starting to emanate from Lincoln's body. And his face, by the time he did reach Springfield and his burial 3 weeks later, was just a mask, basically, a mask. It was rouge and chalk and gimmickry. So, they tried to make a grand, solemn affair out of this, but actually it was a big, moving joke, quite honestly. I could go on. Do we have time to talk about the Indian Wars in your show?
Yes, yes, let's let me have you shift to that.
Okay, well, yeah, that's Lincoln. We could go on and on talking about this. I think folks, if they want to find out more about it, they can just about go to any library. There's plenty of books out there on Lincoln.
Or they could buy your book. And if they want to buy your book, all they have to do is get a hold of you, send you a check. In fact, I'll post it on my radio schedule page so that they'll know where and it's to both books. So you can buy at Amazon or signed copies from Tom at $25 each, postage included. And you can do that via PayPal to mtgoodrich@aol.com. Or if you want to send him a check, just contact me and I'll share the information with you.
Well, thanks for that. That's really neat. Yeah, they can, or they can just drop it if they have no interest at all in Lincoln. You know, the Indian Wars, I'm from the West. I've lived in the West, and so this book was unnatural for me. I knew that something was rotten when I first started researching this book, but you know, for the last 50 years, let's face it, Hollywood and academia, they have tried to portray the American Indian as some sort of New Age echo saint, someone who was one with nature. Every time you see an Indian on the movies or commercials, whatever, he's treated as some deeply and profoundly philosophical individual who every word uttered has weight and true meaning. You know, and we're told also that Indians are one with nature. They protected it. They lived in perfect harmony. They were peaceful, pastoral, passionate, philosophical. And then, of course, came the white man and ruined the whole party. And I think it's pretty clear. I think every film that I'm aware of, at least, over the last 50 years, has hammered home white guilt. In other words, the message is, who but we white devils could so wantonly crush such a peaceful, pastoral, philosophical culture? Who but we white devils could do this? Now, I'm going to tell you, that's you know, more or less, I lived under that illusion, too, as a young man growing up, going to college. There probably are today some people who suffer from white guilt, this angst. And they wail about how we took the Indians' land illegally. But let me assure you one thing, at least I found out from the research of this book, that although we may have difficulty coming to terms with that, that is, taking the Indians' land, they had no problem with it at all back then. They understood completely what was going on back then because they'd been doing it to other people. The Potawatomi up in Wisconsin had kicked out the Sioux, had taken their land. The Sioux over in Montana and Dakotas had kicked out the Crow. Kicked them off their land. The Crow, in turn, turned around and took the land away from the Kiowa. The Kiowa took it away from the Comanche, and so on. Basically, it was a bunch of small bullies bullying other bullies. In other words, smaller bullies. And then the white man came, and we were a big bully. And so you might understand why some of those smaller bullies who had been kicked around by the larger bullies joined with this great bully, the great white bully, because we were really powerful, so they joined with us. That's the reason it was made so much easier. We had these scouts, we had the Crows, the Pawnee, Indians like that, the Shoshone, that helped us fight against the Sioux, the Cheyenne, people like that. And as far as this gentle caretaker thing of the land, has anyone out there seen this remake of the movie The Last of the Mohegans? I went to the movie theater, I don't know, 10 years ago and saw this thing. And this is the way the movie opened up. One of the Indians, Mohegans, is chasing down an elk, and finally they kill the thing, and they run over to it. And then one of the Indians looks up to the sky and starts praying, some sort of a chant. It says, basically he said, brother, I'm sorry that I had to kill you, but I must eat. And went through a bunch of mumbo-jumbo about how great and strong the animal was and how he still had to kill his brother. Well, I'm going to tell you what, I'm sorry. I don't go out, hunt down, and kill my brother. That's a bunch of baloney. Let me tell you this, too. We grew up with this idea that Indians, well, I'm going to tell you, everybody that's listening to this right now grew up with the idea and probably still lives with the idea. It's carved in stone that when an Indian kills a buffalo, he uses every part of that animal, all the way from the hoof to the horn, the tail, the guts, of course, the meat to eat, the hide to wear and to make tents out of and stuff like that. That's mostly a crock of crap. As I learned from the research of this book, and as exotic and alien as this may sound to your folks, I found that when the Indians had plenty of buffalo, they were just as wasteful as any white settler ever was with a buffalo. In the wintertime, when they didn't have many, yes, just like the white settlers, they used every part of that buffalo. They boiled the bones down for soup, too. But when there were plenty of them, like in the springtime, they could be just as wasteful of that animal as anybody I've ever read about. In fact, out west, there are still to this day, there are drops. Kansas, Texas, Montana, Dakotas, drops where Indians would drive herds of buffalo over cliffs. And then when the animals were laying down there with their legs broken and helpless, the Indians would go through and pick out what they wanted. And generally, they always took a tongue. The tongue is a great delicacy, as well as
exactly.
The
hump. Exactly. I've heard that, too. We'll be right back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5 or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with hawthorn, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. herbalhealer.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite is a 7-herb heart protection cocktail designed to support cardiovascular health, blood pressure, and cholesterol levels. February is Heart Month, and we at Heart Drop 2000 are having our Heart Month sale with prices from 6 years ago. Starting now until February 28th, you can purchase a 4-month supply of either capsules or liquid for only $125, including shipping and handling, to help you help yourself. So call now to take advantage of this one-time offer. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
And our guest today is Thomas Goodrich. He is talking about his book, Scalp Dance, Indian Warfare on the High Plains, 1865 to 1879. It was published in 2002. We do have some callers lining up. Should we go ahead and take a caller? Or would you like to finish what you were talking about with the buffalo runs? And that just makes me sick.
People would be wasteful. No. Callers come first.
All righty. Let's go ahead and take Dan in Oregon. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for accepting the call, and this is for your guests. Really, two quick questions. If Lincoln was hated so much, then how in the heck he ever got reelected? That's not question number one. Question number two, I mean, his wife, while in the White House, didn't she have a terrible spending habit? And then eventually her sons put her in the psych hospital. That's my second question. And thank you, and I'll hang up.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, thanks, Dan. Let me take the last question first. Yes, Mary was pathological in her spending sprees. Lincoln only made a certain amount. I think it was $25,000 a year on a president's salary. And Mary, when Lincoln had finally died, they had to have... I guess you would call it auctions, things like that in towns to help her because she had gotten so far in debt by spending on jewels, gowns, things like that crazy hat. As far as Lincoln, did I answer that question, Deanna? Did he ask anything more about Mary in the
past? That she was committed, her son committed her to
Yes, Mary was already pretty far gone, I think, well before her eldest son had her committed for insanity. And by the way, she did come back out of the insane asylum. She wasn't locked up forever. But she was truly a fruit job, Mary was. As far as Lincoln being hated, I stand by that, terrifically hated. It's, as I also hope I mentioned, that he was also loved. There were lots of Republicans out there. Yes, he was reelected. Of course, he was running against an individual who was a, I don't know how to say it, sort of like a McCain type of character running against an Obama. I mean, he was a general who had talked about ending the war, McClellan, but he had done absolutely nothing to end the war when he was in charge of the army. So it was almost, almost like a setup job. I'm not saying it was, but you couldn't have found probably a worse candidate to run against Lincoln, one more likely to lose than George McClellan. But Lincoln was despised in the North, and especially the South, and he was also loved in the North and not in the South by any means. So hopefully I answered that question.
All righty. Thank you.
Back to the Indians and this so-called gentle caretaker of nature. I mentioned the buffalo drops. There was also Indians. You know, I've got accounts, too, of Indians actually hunting buffalo for sport, shooting them just like white people did, never going back to get any of the food. But it was a sport to them. Also, they would start prairie fires, and that would drive deer and elk into killing zones, and the hell with the rest of nature. The ecology could go fly kite. This is hardly what a gentle caretaker of the land would do. And let's not forget something. Those eagle feathers and bear claws and elk teeth that they wore, they didn't grow on trees. They came from living animals. So much for that nonsense. Again, I think it's basically to instill white guilt in that how could we possibly kill these flower children of the 19th century? How could we possibly take their land away? And, you know, I found that Indians could be just as wasteful, just as indifferent as any white man, and I'm not excusing the white slaughter of the buffalo either. I think it was atrocious, abominable. But, again, that's their mindset back then. The Indian, as far as I could see, the only thing separating him from the white man was the Indian lacked the technology to rape the land completely like we did. But basically, people are people. Another something I found out, you know, the Indians, how they broke Mustangs, it was the most cruel thing I've ever heard of. But instead of the movies where we see them gently caressing horses, nope, took a club to them. Tie them up, take a club to them. Take a big long pole and beat them down, basically. And try
to my gosh.
Yes. That animal, believe me, he understood the club as well as any pat on the back. But it's things like that. I should also say, Deanna, that I'm talking about various aspects of the book, and I do mention some of this stuff in there, but the book is basically about warfare on the high plains. And there are oases in the book where I stop and talk about what it was like to be an army wife, on the frontier, or what it was like to be an Indian, or what it was like to be a white woman captured by Indians. You know, in that movie Little Big Man, and I still love that movie, it opens up basically with Jack Crabb and his sister crawling out from a tent that's just been overrun by Indians, and his sister, who's probably 15, 16, 17, she's melodramatically whining to Jack, oh, when they get me, and think about the fate worse than death that I will go through. It's obvious by the way she speaks it and the way the crowd's laughing in the audience that she only wishes she would be raped. That's the message there. Because
how awful.
When the Indian shows up, of course, he has nothing in mind about raping. So, and I'll finish that little thought when we come back.
All righty. Be right back in 3 minutes with our guest today, Thomas Goodrich.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the five-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay. All the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley. An area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species. All gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts, rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pickup at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself from anything out of bounds concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
Indian Warfare on the High Plains, 1865 to 1879, came out in 2002. Before we continue, let's take another phone call. Let's take Brent in Wisconsin. Brent, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon, Deanna, and thank you for taking my call. I would like to direct your guest today and your listeners to a book that I read years ago called The Indian Teepee, by Reginald and Gladys Laubin, L-A-U-B-I-N. They were a French-Canadian couple that showed you how to build a teepee, an Indian teepee, and some of the intricacies of it. Perhaps your guest is familiar with that book.
Sorry, I am not.
Oh, okay. It's not in print anymore, but... I'm sure if you dug, you could find a copy of it. I had a copy in my possession years ago, and since passed out of my hands. But they talked about how the Indian, when they killed a buffalo, and I'm sure this was during leaner times, used everything from the buffalo except for a partly digested mound of grass that was in the stomach. Everything else was used. I agree with you. You're probably right in that when they had a hunt and they drove a buffalo off of a cliff, it was probably pretty hard to control the number of animals that went off the cliff and died. And so there was it was a feast and famine kind of thing with them. The whole mindset of the Indian, and I have some Indian blood in me. I was raised in a white man world, but I have a number of friends that are Indian. And from a number of the different books that I've read over the years, Black Elk Speaks, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, Trail of Tears, and there was another one by Adolph Hungry Wolf, who's the name of it I forget. I don't have them in my possession anymore. But out of one or two of them, the idea of the Indian actually owning property was ridiculous, because they knew that the property was there before they came, and the property was going to be there after they left the earth. And the thought of ownership of it, like the European white man, which I was raised in, I'm mostly white, was ridiculous. And they like to walk on the earth without leaving too deep a moccasin print. They knew that that this was not something that was good for them. I know that they fought. They were fierce fighters. And such as you would be, such as the people in Afghanistan and we see in Iraq and things, they considered their homeland, and we were the invaders. The white man was the invader, and so they were fiercely fighting and of course you're right, they did fight among each other, and some of them were cannibalistic and things, and they had certainly didn't have their belief systems were skewed a little bit or a great deal in some cases, but I don't know. Can you tell us a little bit about where scalping came from?
If you're asking me to try to pinpoint where men first started taking the hair from other men or women or children,
right,
I don't think anybody can point to that. And I dare say you can't either.
Well, information I have leads me to think that out in the Northeast, they had a bounty. I don't know if it was, I believe it was the French, had a bounty on the Indians. And instead of bringing the whole body in, they just cut their hair off and bring it in,
mm-hmm,
and collect this bounty. And, of course, the Indian, in their superstitious beliefs, thought this was counting great coup against their enemy, and so they started doing that then.
Mutilation's probably as old as the caves, and to suggest that it might have begun here or there is basically pointless, I think. Back to Indians using, I don't doubt at all that when they were starving, yeah, you better believe they boiled everything, including the hooves, just like the white men did. But they could be extremely, extremely wasteful. And so were the white people when there was plenty of it available.
Yes.
That's human nature.
The white man, I think, was that way and continues to be that way for the most part. And I don't suffer from white guilt, certainly. I mean, you may think I do, but in one of the books I mentioned, I read, I think it was Adolph Hungry Wolf's book. He read how the riverboats sat low in the water, loaded with buffalo tongues, and the prairies were covered with buffalo carcasses. Now, it wasn't the Indians that were loading the buffalo tongues on the boats and taking them to their people, and it wasn't them that left the buffalo.
They sure traded them when they had the opportunity. Indians lacked the technology.
Well,
that's what I said earlier.
Well,
had they the technology? Have you ever been to an Indian reservation lately? My God, man, it looks like the worst scourge on earth has gone through there. Everything's dead. There's nothing living. Trees are chopped down.
Well, sure.
It's a hell of a way to take care of nature.
There's a reason for that. It's because where the Indians were rounded up on a reservation,
when it's
if they
your
found
people
gold or something,
up, there's always
oil.
A reason for it. When it's my people, we're always the devils. Sorry, I don't buy into that.
If they moved the Indians on a reservation and they found oil or gold or some other resource on it, then they pushed them to another godforsaken part of the country.
And that's the same thing Indians were doing to other Indians when they
well,
found
yes,
better
they were,
hunting
but
ground.
That doesn't take the responsibility off our shoulders any.
Oh, who's ours? Are you an Indian or are you a white man? Or is it so convenient to
go
to this and that?
I'm both. But
I'm
understand from both standpoints
I don't think
where
you
they're
do.
Coming from.
I don't think you do.
Well, I think you need to do a little more research.
I think I have, sir.
Well,
I think you need to read another old book.
Yeah, well, I...
All right. This isn't going further.
Thank you, much, Deanna.
Thank you, Brent.
No, for him to hog the time, basically, and spout the same old nonsense. I'm sorry. He can go to any library in America and pick up a book off the counter that has his particular approach, agenda. I'm telling you this. This is my book, and I wrote this book, and I'm an expert on this book. He can talk all he wants about white crime, white guilt, whatever, white raping the country. Anyway, back to the little big man scenario with the lady who actually wanted to be raped. And basically what the movie director is doing is poo-pooing the idea of rape, fate worse than death. Well, I'll tell you what. In fact, this book began actually with a story of a rape, a woman who was raped time and time again. Her name was Catherine German. Do we have 5 minutes so I can tell this little story? Or?
Absolutely.
Okay. Catherine,
is this from Chapter 8, A Fate Worse Than Death?
Yes, it's in there. Chapter 8, A Fate Worse Than Death. Catherine and her family were headed west to Colorado, passing through Kansas in 1878, I believe it was. And they were surprised one morning by Southern Cheyenne Indians, and Catherine's mother, father, older brother, and a sister, older sister, were killed and scalped right there on the spot. Catherine, 17 years old, and her sister, Sophia, 12, and two littler kids, 7 and 5, were carried off into captivity. Now, back to Little Big Man and this woman dreading rape in this melodramatic manner. Catherine was raped repeatedly. She was turned into a tribal prostitute. She was traded back and forth for this many ponies or that many ponies, depending on what the buyer wanted. Catherine quaked every time she was forced by her master to go get wood and water for the lodge because she knew she was going to be raped anywhere from 1 to 6 times per trip. Catherine, I know this because Catherine told one of the army wives that later asked her about this. Catherine was so desperate to escape this hell on earth, hell on earth, hell on earth, I'm repeating that one day out in far northwest Texas or eastern New Mexico, Catherine found a bottle, a cork, a pencil, and a piece of paper, and with that pencil she wrote out a desperate note for help. Help me, please help me. I don't know where I am. My name is Catherine German. The Indians have me. Please help me. She corked that message in the bottle and then tossed it into the headwaters of the Brazos River. Now, I've been out that area. The Brazos River, even in the best of time, is basically a trickle. At worst, it's just a sandy draw. But that's how desperate Catherine was to escape this hell on earth. Long story short, Catherine was eventually surrendered by the Indians about 4 months later. And the story doesn't get much better after that. Catherine's pregnant, of course, and so is her sister, Sophia. But 2 months after Catherine's rescue, I was going through a newspaper dated that period, 2 months after her rescue, and I found this little article. Strange to say, after having traveled 800 or 1,000 miles along the devious windings and the changing current of the Brazos River, a bottle was picked up on the beach of the Gulf of Mexico in which was a written account of the capture of Catherine German. That bottle had washed all the way down 800 or 1,000 miles, according to this account, and it was actually found and read. Of course, the person who found it, it didn't come in time to help Catherine, save her. But that's where this story actually began, was Catherine German's story. So, you know, some people build ships inside of bottles. You can say that I built this book around a bottle, that bottle that Catherine sent down the river. Catherine's story, it's very similar to every other woman I researched for this book, roughly 12 or 13 women. Rape, bondage, terrible, brutal conditions, being forced to carry hundreds of pounds of sticks and things like that, beatings, rape, did I mention rape? And rape, tribal prostitution, back and forth. Not the Harlequin romance scenario that we're used to seeing or reading about how women basically become princesses. I saw a little bit of Dances with Wolves the other night. I've never watched the entire movie. I got kind of ill the first part of it. But I did see one white woman, a captive, in there, and she looks remarkably well, considering she'd been in captivity for quite a while.
Right.
Still beautiful. Believe me, they didn't look that way when they were finally killed or surrendered by the Indians.
Now, Catherine German was rescued.
She was rescued along with Sophia. The Indians were starving on the prairie, so they brought them back into a fort and went back to their reservation. The two little kids, the little girls, were turned loose to die on the prairie, and they were eventually recaptured by the Indians and then rescued by a thundering cavalry charge. The soldiers actually.
Oh my goodness!
And they lived. They lived out their lives. Catherine's life didn't get a lot better, though. She married and moved to Kansas. Her husband tried to kill her with an axe later on in life. And but back to the women who are captured by Indians. I have never seen an honest depiction of what it was like if you were a white woman captured. Now, the closest that I can think of that comes to it is The Searchers with John Wayne. Now, that's a pretty dark movie, actually. And John Ford, bless his heart, is not some Steven Spielberg. John Ford loved to tell stories as honestly as he could get away with. But even that, the lady who played the captive looked very princess-like to me by the time they rescued her.
Huh.
No, they believe me. They aged... I would say they aged 20 years in two. That's the kind of situation they were in. They were overworked. The squaws hated their guts. Of course, because the chief, the master, whoever had her, was paying a lot of attention to her. So were other braves in the camp. But, you know, even though I'm hitting upon some aspects of this book, the book is mostly about battles and fighting. It starts out with Sand Creek. Have you ever heard of Sand Creek, the Sand Creek Massacre, Deanna?
Yes, I have. Uh-huh.
Okay, the thing most people don't know, now this was one of our, it was the white, really a white slaughter fest.
It's terrible.
Really did some terrible things to these Indians. These guys went nuts. I won't describe everything they did, but it was truly a massacre. But what's left out in other histories, like our gentleman talked about, D. Brown in his books, what's left out of that was the slaughter of whites preceding this. Women with their heads cut off, children with their brains bashed out on rocks, women raped and then disemboweled. This is what these men had seen who ended up at Sand Creek and took it to another level, another slaughter fest. That's always left out, the convenient stuff that's conveniently left out. But it goes all the way to the very end of the High Plains Wars, and it talks about what battle was really like and torture. Indians love to get a guy alive and torture him. In fact, there's a chapter in the book called The Last Bullet. You've heard that old expression about say the last bullet for yourself?
Yeah.
Well, that's not some idle play on rhetoric. They actually meant say the last bullet, and many men did blow their brains out when they thought they were going to be captured because the torture was so fiendish, so diabolical. There was no quick kill to it. Basically, it kept you alive as long as you were entertaining, starting fires, stretching you out on the prairie, starting fires on one hand until it was burned black, and then another hand until it was burned black. All the while you're screaming, the feet might come next, and then maybe 2 days later, they'd start a small fire right in your midsection while you're still tied down. A little ember was put on your belly so that it would eat right through your stomach all the way to the back. And, of course, then at some point you will die. But
my goodness.
Yeah, you don't see this stuff for very good reasons. Number one, it's just sickly to look at, sick and ghastly to even think about. But it might explain why the war was as vicious as it was, and why there were so many massacres, and why people didn't take prisoners because of things like this. If we've got, we're getting pretty close to sign-off, aren't we? I've got
exactly, and we have a couple more callers too.
Okay, we'll go for it.
All righty, let's take Scott in Arizona. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got to get one of that Indian book. I had a book. Captured by Indians. There's stories of the people who were actually captured. And what you're saying is exactly what they were saying. And there's one up there around the Great Lakes, and his master came back with soup and had an Englishman's hand cooked in it. They would go and make English soup before a fight, stuff like that. I think they'd get power or something.
Wow. Gee, I never heard of that.
Yeah.
As far as
about 10 accounts. And then that one about the torture, mm-hmm. like down there in Texas, they had one guy and they you know, the whole tribe would go by and poke them once with the spear, and this went on for days, and burn them, and in the morning there'd just be a pile of ash and bone.
And these soldiers and scouts and many of the pioneers, they heard these stories. They knew what was going on, so to say that last bullet, they really meant save that last bullet, or maybe two. How many people could miss their heads, I don't know, but it was the most vicious fighting in world history. I've never seen anything approach this, and there's been some terrible wars. But there was no ticker tape parade for these guys when they came back after the Indian Wars had been won in Washington. Basically, we hear a lot about Vietnam and the soldiers, how they come back from these no-win wars. Well, this was another one. They actually won this one, but they didn't get any parade. But Boris,
all
right, and pots,
we do have to go to a break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
We've been helping people for over 18 years.
Call Zero Debt Guaranteed, 800-477-9256. Ask for free information, no obligation. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com now.
Wouldn't you agree? Healthy people are happier and more productive. Obesity is the root cause of many health problems. Do you want to lose weight safely, look sexy and attractive without side effects and no chemicals? Lose weight without the side effects safely with Zeno's Organic Dietary Supplements. Made in the USA, 100% USDA certified organic. Visit www.zenos.com. That's www.zenohs.com. Try our products risk-free for a limited time offer. No purchase necessary. You only pay shipping and handling. Get your old, sexy body back now. Visit Zenos.com. Get your free supplements now. Visit Zenos.com right now. www.zenohs.com. That's www.zenohs.com.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today has been Thomas Goodrich. He's talking about his book, Scalp Dance, Indian Warfare on the High Plains, 1865 to 1879. We do have one last caller. Let's really quickly take Mike in South Carolina. Mike?
Hi, Dan.
Hi. You have a question or comment?
Your guest has been very, very interesting. I had some cousins, very, very distant cousins in the 1800s, late 1800s, by the last name of Blinn, B-L-I-N-N, that were captured she and two children were captured out of Fort Bend, Colorado Springs and Denver. They were captured by Geronimo, and the cavalry went after them the next day, caught up with them in about 2 or 3 days, and when the cavalry caught up with the Indians, they had killed her and also both the kids. So this is also something that was standard to do. It wasn't they didn't hand them over or capture them. They killed them when they knew they were going to be overrun. Also
true.
Here in North Carolina, Cherokee, there's very few Indians that I know of that will carry a $20 bill with them because it has Jackson's portrait on it or his picture. He was the one who ordered the Trail of Tears. There's lots of stuff like that that gets left open and unraveled, so to speak. People don't know this, but during the Indian Wars, the Cherokee and two other tribes were cannibals. They did eat their captives, and that's not well known, but that is in treaties that were eventually made that they would stop that behavior. This isn't well known either. One more point about John Wilkes Booth, who killed Lincoln. The woman he stayed with, so to speak, kind of gave him room and board. A woman named Mary Sterrett was held responsible for being part to that assassination, and she was literally hung by the judge because of her involvement. She wasn't really involved, but it was very, very sad that that happened, because when they hung her, she didn't die. They just left her to strangle to death. It kind of goes a little bit more into some of the issues, Dan, you bring up concerning the Nuremberg trials after Hitler was captured, because the officers, only about 10 or 15 officers, actually hung, and the rest of them were strangled. So these truths that are coming out that you bring out are real, real, it's sensitive, and I think it's time for people to understand what the reformation of the truth really is all about. I thank your guests for bringing up the truth.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thanks, Mike, so much. Yeah, Mary Surratt was the first woman executed by the federal government. And, yes, nobody dies. I've never ran across an account where anybody dies cleanly on the scaffold, on the gallows. Everybody basically strangles to death. And sometimes it takes 20 minutes to do that. And, by the way, it was common practice among Indians that the first sign of trouble to kill their captives. So you're right on that again. In fact, that's the reason I could only go to about 13 or 14 women for that chapter, Deanna, you're talking about, The Fate Worse Than Death. So many of them were killed. By the way, battlefields, modern battlefields look nothing like they did back then. After an Indian massacre, body parts strewn everywhere, heads, guts, arms, legs, hands, everywhere, and just an incredible thing. That also infuriated a lot of soldiers.
Right. Well, thank you so very much, Thomas, for being on the program today. I can't say that it's been enjoyable. It's certainly been revealing and educational. But
thanks for having me, Deanna. You're just you're like a good, honest heart. People are drawn to it like a magnet. So that's why I enjoy your program and your callers, your guests too.
Well, thank you so much, Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye, listeners. Talk with you tomorrow.